Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Fairy Conclave. This is episode 93. I'm your host, Alec. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm super excited to have a very special guest on for this episode. It's Lua Stardust. How are you doing today, Lua?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing really good. I'm very excited to be here. And yeah, I'm just jazzed to talk about this.
Yes. Yeah, me too. Yeah. And to introduce you a little bit, if, you know, if people don't know who you are, which I'm sure they do already, but just in case, you are a model, a cosplayer, and a YouTuber, mainly being a part of the Scrybabies YouTube channel, which I have been a huge fan of. Right before we started recording, I watched you had a new episode that released like just this morning.
Yeah, and
I'm sure you do some other stuff too as well. So I pass it over to you to kind of introduce yourself.
I mean, you did such a great job. That is pretty much what I do. I've been modeling and cosplaying for over 10 years. Scrybabies is on its first year. I do with Tori the Vast. She's amazing. We are a woman-led Magic the Gathering gameplay show where we try to focus on creating a diverse and inclusive space while also showcasing people in the community that either you might not see that often or, you know, or just on the East Coast, which I feel like doesn't get enough love as far as content goes. So I feel very fortunate to do that with her. And yeah, that's pretty much who I am and what I do.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. No, super important. I love your goals with your YouTube channel as far as that kind of stuff goes. I think we definitely need more of that, so I love to see it. And so I'm excited to have you on today to interview you about one of your commander decks, which is always one of my favorite things to do, because I think you can't get like more of a cool insight into somebody's personality and like the way they play Magic more than asking them questions about one of their favorite decks that they've been playing for a long time. So yeah, I'm super excited to get into one of your decks, Lua. But really quick before we do that, I shout out a patron at the Conclave Mentor level every episode. And this episode will be dedicated to HB, who has been a Conclave Mentor patron. And I really appreciate it. Yeah, we love it. So if you want a chance to be shouted out on an episode, go check out my Patreon. It's like fairly new, but I'm excited to be doing it. And yeah, okay. I think that's it for the introduction. So let's get right into the interview for this episode with the first question, which is, who is your commander and what inspired you to build this deck in the first place?
Oh man. So my commanders are 11. And Mike from the classic Netflix show Stranger Things. I know they have a new name, right? Because they got like a reprint in the one spooky set. But yeah. I don't go by that. We still keep it as Mike and Eleven because I wanted it to be Mike and Eleven's D&D game. And I really just love Stranger Things. I love everything about it. So I really just wanted to embrace that with this deck.
I love it. Yeah. And I wanted to mention that you have, I know at least one time you've played this deck on an episode of Scrybabies. Mm-hmm. I have it up, episode 5. So if anyone wants to check out like this deck in action, which was really fun for me when I watched this episode, definitely check that out. So,
oh, it's a great episode too. Yes. Yeah. It's a really, really fun one.
Yeah. I love it with Lady Danger and Rachel Weeks.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, and I am loving the commander choices too. I think that there are so many cool universes beyond commanders, mm-hmm. and I kind of love that it's like perfect for commander to be able to pick some of these. And Mike and Eleven is an awesome choice.
Just in general, I feel like there's a lot of like you either love universes beyond or you don't, right? And I do. I really love it. I think it's really fun and silly, so.
Totally. Yeah, I think it definitely depends on what the universe is beyond that is bringing, like, into Magic. And that's kind of how I felt at first. But then, you know, as I saw, like, the Fortnite reskin cards, I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I love this. Like, I don't care anymore. It's awesome. And I kind of love to see Stranger Things especially. I do think works really well in the Magic kind of area. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. I love it. Cool. So what is it about this deck that you just enjoy most when you sit down to play it?
Yeah, I went into this when the set came out. I was like, what seems like the most fun? And I knew I wanted to play 11 right away. She's a really strong card. Grixis, just bomb card. And I felt really excited about her. And everything I was looking at, I was like, well, you know, her and Mike are like, they have a thing. I think that's really cute. And then I kind of looked at cards and I was like, we have these D&D sets. We have all this other stuff. I was like, what if it's like Mike's D&D game? And it has dungeons and dragons and every little Demogorgon reference you can get and just weird and funky stuff. So that's really what I wanted to do. And I guess my favorite part about it, I mean, there's just honestly so much silly stuff that happens in it. A lot of these cards we're going to talk about get interchanged and when new stuff comes out and new sets come out. But yeah, it's try to make as many tokens as possible, win the game with them, or just really use 11's ability to cast big spells that are dumb is kind of the plan. Mike is like mostly there for colors, but I have tried a few options of stuff with him, like regenerating creatures, like bringing him back from the graveyard and doing things with that. But
nice. Yeah, that makes sense. And so with these two as your commanders, it is a 5-color deck, right? So you basically have all the options available for D&D stuff to choose from. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. Before we get too much further, would you mind reading off what Mike and 11 do exactly?
Yeah, absolutely. So 11 the Mage is Grixis in one colorless, and the card says itself. Your maximum hand size is 11. Whenever 11 the Mage attacks, you draw a card and lose one life. Then if you have 11 or more cards in your hand, you may cast an instant or sorcery card from your hand without paying its mana cost. So free spells. I love that. And then Mike's card is 2 colors to tap him, and you can choose target creature in your graveyard that was put there from the battlefield this turn, and it returns to the battlefield tapped.
Nice.
And he's a green, white, and one colorless. So nice rainbow. Wooburg.
Love it. Yeah, perfect for June, Pride Month.
Yes.
Cool, I love it. And I think I'm excited to talk about what free spells you can get off of 11's ability. I think that's, it's like not too hard, I don't think, to probably get that to go off.
No, it's quick.
Yeah. So yeah, that seems very scary and also very awesome. Cool, okay. So yeah, let's get into kind of like what you've done with this deck since you first built it. Are there any like notable changes you've made or anything?
The nice thing is like you got Moxfield, so you can just view my entire edit history and kind of see what kind of changes I've made and kind of gone back and forth with. The one thing when I started, I was like, I'm putting every class card in here, which quickly I realized was not needed. But I thought it was cute flavor for like, you'll look at this deck and there's some really fun stuff that makes sense. And then there's cards that kind of suck, but they're there for the aesthetics of the deck and like to be fun. So I've definitely tried out a lot of silly things like that. I think like some powerhouses for sure are the Ancient Copper Dragon and the Silver Dragon. With 5 color, it's super, super easy to get treasures in this deck. And with, you know, having an Academy manufacturer, which is like kind of like a key part to this deck, as soon as I make a treasure, then I get a food and a clue. And the clues are essential to help me draw more cards for 11. The Ancient Silver Dragon is also a beast because you can draw a bunch of cards, which is really, really helpful. I have almost drawn out my whole deck with it, though, so it's not the best in certain circumstances, especially because we do a lot of dice rolling. Like, there's a Hoarding Ogre. We have the Zorn card. There's a bunch of cards that are, like, dice rolls. And then I have a Will card, not Will the Wise, but another Will card, the red one that, like, lets you roll again. It's not in here, but I have it in my deck currently. So anytime I can roll a dice, I get excited for it. But sometimes it's really the death of me with this deck.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. I think I play the Ancient Gold Dragon, which is the white one.
Yeah.
And one of my favorites, it makes fairy dragon tokens, which I love. And yeah, and I play it in this mono white tokens deck that I have. And there was one game that I'll never forget where I needed like 5 or more fairy dragons, and just having them enter would have had me win the game. It was some kind of like creatures entering, dealing damage to my opponents type of thing. And so I was like, okay, I have like a very good chance of getting at least that many off of this. And I rolled literally a one off of that and got one fairy dragon token. And I thought that was so funny. So I can see that, yeah, you never know if you're going to get one or 20 off of the silver or copper dragons as well.
I love a gamble. That is a big thing about me. I love a gamble. That's why I play a lot of decks that are like Winota and stuff like that, because I like not exactly knowing how the game's gonna go. It really is up to chance, and this deck is like, I have a game plan with what I'm doing, but it leaves a lot of options with the dice rolls that I can go a different way.
I love that. Yeah, it adds a lot of fun, just like fun variants to it, which I think feels very D&D like. Yes. So
yeah,
that's perfect. We'll get into kind of like some of the cards later, but I did, while we're on the topic, I love Delina Wild Mage. Just in general, this card is so cool. When Delina attacks, choose target creature you control and then roll a d20. And if you get 1 through 14, you create a tapped and attacking token that's a copy of it, except not legendary, which is epic. And you exile it at the end of combat. If you roll a 15 through 20, you create one of those tokens and then roll again. So... I've played against this card, and I also play this card in my Obeka deck, which kind of lets you keep the tokens longer than you're supposed to. And it's just like you were talking about. You never know how many you'll get, but it's fun.
Never. But it's such a cool deck, and it's like, it's such a cool part of the deck, rather. And you really can't lose. Like, you get something really good out of it either way. She's not that expensive to cast. She's already, like, she's a 3/2. Like, that's pretty decent, right? I'm pretty happy with her overall. But yeah, if you get between that 15 and 20, it's, like, super cool because you could just keep knocking them out. But I think she's a very cool part of this deck, and I'm happy she's in here.
Yes. Yeah, me too. I love to see her in this deck. And for, like, so many reasons. Just fits this theme so well. And... and is exciting and makes tokens, which is what a lot of these cards want to do.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So my next question for you is, when you sit down to play this deck, could you talk us through kind of like the goals that you have as you play?
Yeah. I always kind of look for a card that will generate me clues or treasures right away. As far as like, are we talking like win cons or just like what I'm looking at the table?
Both, I think. How you get to the win cons and then what gets you there at the end.
There's just some silly ones. So I mentioned earlier, Academy Manufacturer is like a key card that I love. If I get this card, it's guaranteed one or two turns slaps. Like, it's always very, very good. Things like Aristic Study and Dockside, like, those don't need to be in the deck, but it's, who wants to pay for Aristic Study? Nobody, right? So getting the extra card draw for 11 is very good. But with Academy Manufacturer, the reason why I like them so much is because you get one clue, one food, and one treasure for every time you make one of those tokens. And with that, my goal is to generate a lot, which is very easy to do with this deck. You generate a lot of them, and then I will either cast a calling ritual or some kind of thing that will destroy those tokens with like a Nadir's Nightblade out, which is whenever a token you control leaves the battlefield, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. So while I'm stacking them through combat, like, that's a little bit of a help for my life total, especially because I'm losing one every time 11 attacks. And then I'm also draining the table. So sometimes I'll just like blast a calling ritual out of nowhere, have like 60 treasures, win the game, and it's very silly. Sometimes it's just a longer grindy game. I also have a Marionette Master in there too, so that's really helpful for that. And Reckless Fireweaver, that's also a really helpful card with the artifacts going in and out. So that's kind of like the main thing. And then getting 11 to cast a free instant or sorcery spell is really great. When I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with this, I kind of went through options. And when I realized five color was an option, I was like, we have to play all the ultimatums.
Yes.
Yeah. So we run every ultimatum in here. Some are better than others, but it's never a miss to play like a 6-mana, 7-mana card for free.
Yeah.
That usually has a big hit. There's also a conflux in there, which is really stupid. It lets me get a lot of cards that I'm eating at once. So attack with 11, play a Conflux, get 5 cards is pretty good. And then I have some cards in here too that are like no maximum hand size, so if I ever go over, that's nice as well. Yeah, it's really about generating as many tokens to sack them and destroy people. And if it's not that option, we have a lot of things for combat. We have all of the Stranger Kids in here. So we have Max and Lucas and Will the Wise. Will's like pretty much the most important, I think, out of the other kids in the deck. Because you can cast him. If he goes to the graveyard, I can get him back with Mike and then constantly have people... which if you're not familiar with Will the Wise, it says when he enters or leaves the battlefield, each opponent may investigate. Each opponent who doesn't loses one life, and you investigate X times, where X is is one plus the number of opponents that investigated this turn. So most of the time you'll get like 2 to 3 clue tokens, because people don't really want to lose life, and that's just another benefit to having an academy manufacturer or something out. So yeah. And there's also, I can never say this card's name, Triska Diphthyphile, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. Yep. Yeah. The 13. Cares about 13.
Like, it's just a dumb card. It costs 2 mana. It gets killed a lot. But it's just a little thing where it's like, if nobody stops me and I have 13 cards in hand, I just win the game. Like, it's just silly stuff. So, I also thought it was a little spooky, which is what, like, with this deck, I run all the, what are they called? The lands that are from, what's the spooky set? Crimson Vow and Midnight Hunt?
Yeah.
So I got the little spooky lands because I wanted it to look like the Upside Down in there. I have some cards that, you know, just look a little more spooky in general. And then I had ALK Alters do some of the, like, I guess we call them duels, but not really, like the breeding pools. ALK Alters did... which I would send you some pictures of because they're very, very cute. But he basically did these lands where they look like the D&D modules. Because you know how they did the D&D modules for certain lands in the D&D sets?
Yeah.
They didn't do them for, you know, like a lot of basic lands and other stuff. So he did them for like Temple Garden and my fetch lands. So my fetches and shocks, that's the correct word. He did those. So I can't put them into Moxfield, but I have those as well. So they look really thematic and they're very cool. I'm just getting excited about this deck. I love this deck.
Yes. No, that's why I'm here. I love that. I think like picking a theme that isn't fully supported in that way and then getting someone to alter it so that it fits the theme is just like so good. Like if somebody sat down with the deck set up that way, I just always get so excited to see what cards they have. And I always want to look through their deck afterwards. So yeah, I love that so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's cool. I get to play like dumb cards. Like I play a Mind Flayer. Which is a fine card. It's when Mind Flayer enters the battlefield, gain control of target creature for as long as you control Mind Flayer. Like, it's a fine card. It's 5 mana. Kind of isn't great, but it's in there for flavor. So if you look at this list, you'll just see a lot of stuff like that.
I'm such a fan of stuff like that. I think it's important to have cards in your deck that make you excited, and especially if it's like a certain theme that makes you excited, then you're just gonna have a good time playing that deck every time.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely, like, my weak spots, but I will absolutely find a reason to keep them in the 99.
Yes, I love it. Yeah, I just noticed Demogorgon's Clutches, which is such a funny card.
Sucks, and... but it's, you gotta keep it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the art is Stranger Things, literally. And, and it's too good. And who knows? Maybe you'll... So it's a sorcery... It's, like, the classic kind of, like... target opponent discards 2 cards, mills 2, and loses 2 life. There's kind of like a version of that every set pretty much, and yeah. This is the Demogorgon version, which who knows, maybe you'll get somebody's like key card out of their hand.
I know, like it could be good. Yeah, I also have like you find a curse idol in there, and there's another one, you find some prisoners, because it's just like classic things you hear in D&D. And the cards are fine, like they're not the worst thing, but they're not like extremely beneficial to how this deck plays out. I want to go back and revisit this and pull, because I didn't put too much from the newest D&D set, but I want to do more dungeon stuff. So a lot of dragons, a lot of token stuff, but I want to put a little bit more focus in dungeons too, but it's hard when you're trying to put multiple themes into a deck and make it functional. Even if it's not the most functional, I have fun playing it. So,
totally. Yeah. I have a lot of decks that kind of operate that way. And they're always fun to play. I think for, I'm sure you could find some dungeon, or I guess an initiative kind of is dungeon.
Yeah, they got a lot
also
of
yeah. Yeah, there's probably something that at least has some overlap, like making tokens or something like that. So yeah, there actually are quite a lot of, I was kind of realizing this recently, that there are a lot of the D&D cards that have slowly made their way into my decks since those sets came out, especially the Baldur's Gate set. Yeah. Good and like relatively inexpensive, like price wise. And I'm a fan. I love it.
I think the sets were slept on for sure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
My next question for you, now that we've kind of gone through how the deck works and how you plan on winning at the end, what are some of this deck's weaknesses that you might want to think about while you're playing?
So I mentioned already the bad cards that you play in it. You can make those choices. I think that is a weakness. I think there needs to be a little more card draw because it's not always the most accessible. I rely on clue tokens a lot. But then you're paying 2 mana for them, so it's a little bit like that's a little bit weak. I would say it's not always the fastest deck. It could be a little bit more of like a slower paced deck, which is fine for me. I'm playing it casually, right? I say as I cast a bunch of ultimatums, but I am playing it casually. And I definitely want to, like, I think there's ways that you can work around that. We were talking about, you know, ways of bringing things back from the graveyard more with Mike. There's ways to give 11 extra combats because it doesn't say once per turn, right? It just says when it attacks. If you wanted to go there and have her attack multiple times, you can cast multiple ultimatums.
That's cool.
Things. Yeah, and then even if you don't get a big giant spell like that, like if you have an instant that you cast for free, that's totally cool. Like I've done a Vampire Tutor where I'm like, I know I have the mana to pay for it, but I'll do it for free and keep the mana for something else. There's definitely a lot more you can explore with those. So I don't think it's 100% the most structured thing, but I think it's really fun, and I think there's a lot that can go into a deck like this if you're going for the flavor route.
Totally. Yeah, I think lately I've definitely switched my mindset a little bit building decks to just kind of restrict myself by some kind of flavor, and I find it to be so much more interesting and fun to build decks, especially because there are approximately 10,000 new cards every month. Yeah. That it's so much easier to like sort through those just mentally if you're like, okay, here's my theme that's like mechanical but also flavor for some reason, some flavor that you want to include.
It's a different way to build, and it's really fun.
And I think also when you play decks like that, it's really fun for people to play against them and like watch them on being played on streams and videos and things like that. I'm always interested in someone's weird themed deck with bad cards in it more than, you know, I don't know, something I guess a little bit more generic. Sweet. Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. My next question for you is, are there any notable cards that are, there actually are probably a lot of these in this deck, but just kind of like notable cards that fill more generic roles, like card advantage, mana ramp, or removal, but are like spicier for this deck?
Like yes and no. Like I don't know how generic they are, right? I think there's like silly cards that you wouldn't maybe expect to be like that great. I guess this isn't card of it kind of is like a Jessica's Will, right? You get a free Jessica's Will off of 11, you get a bunch of like red mana.
Ooh.
you get extra cards, which already is pretty good because you're having a lot of ways to get tokens in this deck as far as clue, food, and treasure go. And like food doesn't come up as much, but the other two are like really 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 going in this deck. There is doublers for that as well, so it really helps with that. There is like some mana ramp, like I think I got a cultivate or something in here, but like honestly with how quick we generate stuff, like I have like a fey offering too, which is at the beginning of each end step, if I've cast a non-creature spell and a creature spell, you make a clue, treasure, and food token. And that's like a 3 mana spell in itself, but like those little guys add up so quickly with this deck that I really don't feel like I need to use too much mana ramp, and that's very good to say, especially when you're running a five color deck, because it could be very hard. I'm running like 30 lands. Sometimes I think I could do without as many, but I like to be a little safe with it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I think decks like this are so interesting when you're putting like the mana and ramp together, because when you look at it, I mean, the sorcery section, there's like 6-7 mana plus sorceries. Yeah, you're like, no way you're casting those super reliably with a lower amount of lands. But I mean, your commander lets you cast them for free, so for they're like technically zero. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And even like if you like, I feel like when I play five color decks, I'm usually like, okay, I need like 3 lands in there to start to feel good. But I can easily play this with like 2 if I have something that's going to get me something early on, right? Like I feel confident enough with it. As far as like removal goes, we have like the generic stuff for every color. So there's like a basic counter spell, which is not removed, but it's a counter spell. There's a Cyclonic Rift. There's like a Deflecting Swat of Swords. Those are kind of like the basic. I have a Teferi's Protection to protect myself and my beautiful cards that I don't want to go away. But my main like thing is a Calling Ritual, because it just benefits me.
Yeah,
most of the time. So that's like my main thing for board wipes. I also have a Ruinous Ultimatum, which is not a fun card. It's destroy all non-land permanents your opponents control. So helps me out a little bit, but kind of, you know, doesn't just do anything to my board. So
yeah, I like it. I think Calling Ritual is one of those cards that I have never seen it cast and have it not be like completely absurd.
It's a fantastic card. And like, you don't think about how much stuff is mana 2 or less.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff. So it definitely hits a lot of
them. Right. Yeah. It always seems to be like at least 20 things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I love that. And as far as the mana goes, I do think like even in a five color deck, you start with a couple lands and then just get like an Arcane Signet. And you're pretty much set after that.
You get like a turn 1, 2, or 3 Sol Ring into like a Signet or something silly, and it's perfect.
Yeah, or like even better, Chromatic Lantern. I just noticed is in here. That's a favorite of mine. Yeah,
I
like you
like
get one of those.
Don't like it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I remember thinking it was the most powerful mana rock when I first started Commander. So I just put it in every deck that was like 2 or more colors. And I still kind of do that a lot, and I think it's it always helps me at least a little bit. So yeah, I'm with you there.
Five color, I feel like anything over 3 can have it in the deck, right? Because you're tapping like any mana source you have, or any land rather. You tap it for 1 mana of any color, but you can also tap the lantern, and it's only 3 mana. I feel like that's so good. There's
Agreed.
No negative.
Exactly, and I am maybe a little bit too greedy, but I just love playing like colorless utility lands too.
Yep.
But sometimes those aren't good for you because you need a color or whatever. But with Chromatic Lantern, you can get it all. You can have everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. Sweet. Okay, so as far as the kind of like core strategy of this deck, what like one card would you say is the MVP of the deck that you just, when you see it in your hand, you know things are going to go well?
Oh, it's the Academy Manufacturer. Yeah.
Nice.
Once
yeah.
that's in there, I'm like, that's pretty good. I love a Grim Hireling because most of the time 11 gets through with damage. She's 3/5. There's definitely ways that like we can get around to like buffing her, making her a little bit bigger if we want to. But most of the time people are like, oh, whatever, you're going to lose the life. I don't really care about like taking the 11 damage, and also it's on attacks, right? So she doesn't have to do the damage. But yeah, Academy Manufacturer is really great. Hopper's not bad. I actually like Hopper a lot. He is a 4/4 with menace, and when he attacks, you investigate once for each non-token attacking creature, so that helps. We get some clue tokens with that. I love to see him in there. And yeah, anything like a Rionya or a Reckless Fire Weaver or an Audio's Knotblade, like something that could really benefit the ultimate win con is like great to see in our hand, or anything that just gives us extra dice rolls. Like it's hard because like I said, this deck doesn't do one thing. It does dice rolling, dungeons, dragons, and then just like tokens. So it's really hard to be like, this is the perfect hand for my game plan. It's like, all right, here's my hand. What can I get with this? We can figure this out, kind of.
Yeah. I love that. Then you're kind of trying to figure out what your strategy is, like, mm-hmm. game by game, and it's not something you kind of have, like, predetermined before you've started looking at your hand.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I was going to say, I have an Eloise Nephalia Sleuth deck, which...
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, which I see in this deck, too. And, yeah, I love her, too. As the commander, so much fun. And, yeah, just like you said, making clues all the time with Academy Manufacturer out is just... There's barely anything better you could do in Commander that feels as cool as that. As far as creating clue tokens goes, I noticed you have Anointed Procession in this deck also, which will get so absurd if you're making clues, foods, and treasures all the time. Yeah,
yep.
I love that.
I used to have a Chatterfang in here, and then I played a game on EDH Hijinks, and it was the worst to keep track of. It was like... I had Anointed Procession and Parallel Vibes out, which canceled each other, but they were still confusing me. Plus, I had one of the dragons, like the Ancient Copper or the Silver Dragon, and a Chatterfang. And it was chaos. So, like, if you want to go that route, Chatterfang is super great in that deck, but I hate doing math, and it just was insane. So,
yeah, especially on spell table games, I feel like stuff like that is just like... I'm sorry, everyone. Like, my tokens are spilling out of the screen.
Yeah, it is. It's really fun, and I love it, but it is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Cool. Okay. So this next question is kind of a silly question for this deck, but I'll ask it anyway. It's do you have any pet cards that you just can't resist playing in this deck?
Oh, yeah. I definitely, like think Wizard class is fine in the deck. It's one of the class cards, so it almost looks like a saga, but you pay for each level. So the first one is you have no maximum hand size, and then the second is when it becomes level 2, you draw 2 cards. And then the third one is whenever you draw a card, you put a +1/+1 counter on target creature control. So this pairs really well with 11. And then I have Barbarian class, which is a dice roll card. So if you would roll one or more dice, instead roll that many +1 and ignore the lowest roll. So that really helps out with those. But like I said earlier, I kept all of them in my deck for a while just because I was like, I can't get rid of these. They're so cute. But yeah. I was able to keep these two because I justified them and they do pretty well in here. I also have Treasure Chest in here, which is not the best card. It costs 3 mana to cast it, and then you have to pay 4 to sacrifice it and roll a d20. If you roll a 1, you're trapped and you lose 3 life. If you roll a 2 to 9, you create 5 treasure tokens. If it's a 10 to 19, you gain 3 life and draw 3 cards. And if it's a 20, you search your library for a card. If it's an artifact card, it goes onto the battlefield. Otherwise, it goes into your hand. So the card's not the greatest, but the idea of it being a little treasure chest for D&D is like my little pet thing. Same with like the deck of many things. So anything that's got like thematic stuff in there as a name is in the pet card pile because... I love it, and it's not always the most synergistic.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's great. I think Treasure Chest especially is, I've been playing a lot of the new Zelda lately, and it reminds me of that. Like, sometimes you'll put in so much work in a shrine to get to that chest, and then you'll open it, and it either has literally just 5 arrows in it, or it'll have some epic, like, shield or something.
Yep.
And yeah, that's what this reminds me of.
It is very much that.
Yeah, that's great. I think that I love lately. So when I kind of first started interviewing people's decks, they would have like 1, maybe 2 pet cards in the deck. And I just love this kind of like shift I've been seeing lately where now when I ask that question, I'll get like literally 10 cards out of the deck at least that are their favorite cards or their pet cards. And yeah, I just love that. I think it's very fun.
Unless you're like Commander's a social and a not competitive format, unless you're playing like CDH, right? So like, I think I love playing lists that other people make, but I think brewing is so special. And then when you get to show somebody like the silly choices you made or see people appreciate the cards that you put in there. And like, especially when I play this one, people get so excited for the lands and they love a thematic card. So it's really fun to like share that portion of it with people. And I don't know. I think it's the way it's deck building is like your personality and like not always, but at least like with stuff like this, I feel like it's part of your personality. So I think it's really special to put in cards like that.
Totally. Yeah, I think with also with like going to events and playing with people for the first time and like lots of different groups, like multiple times in a day, things like that, I think it's so cool to like have people ask you questions about like what why did you put this card in your deck, and like yeah, like what kind of cool stuff have you done with this card. I just think it generates a lot of really fun discussions, and yeah, adds like putting your personality into it is kind of what this whole community is built around. So
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
huge fan of stuff like that. And my next question is always one of my favorites, and that is, what is one of your favorite like in-game moments that you've had while you were playing this deck?
Oh man, I think it was when I had first made the deck. I was looking at the combo with Coloring Ritual and like Nadia's Nightblade and like other stuff, and same with like Reckless Fireweaver, and I wasn't sure if it was going to work the way I wanted it to. People see you making, like, I had the Academy manufacturer out, so I was, like, generating a lot of stuff. And so people wanted to kill that, but they weren't ready for me to cast the Nottinger's Nightblade and then sack a bunch of stuff. And they were like, oh, wait, like, she's doing something completely different than we thought was going to happen. And drain their life with that. So that was really fun to see people kind of figure out like the puzzle, or even when I do play this deck and it doesn't go off that way, if I show them what was going to happen with it, people are usually like really like into it. Just because a lot of it's thematic, when especially when they see the ultimatums and everything else, like those are my favorite experiences. I don't like taking people's stuff and being crappy about it, but I do like seeing their reaction to cards. It's very silly.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things too. And when you play a card and somebody's reaction is just like, that's so amazing, I love it so much, you're just like, yeah, so cool. Fulfilled. Yeah, there's nothing better than that. Sweet. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing so much awesome like background and personality and everything that goes into making this deck. I think it's something that is so special and I love to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And yes, I love it. And we've made it to my last question for you, which is, if anyone out there is inspired to build a deck similar to this, whether it's like with Mike and 11 and a D&D theme, or just kind of like picking up bits and pieces of the different themes going on in this deck, what advice would you give to those people?
Well, if you are interested in building this deck, I have a considering section where there's a lot of new cards that I'm going to kind of be swapping in and out. If you want to try out any of those, I think those are really fun. I think that people are very, and it makes sense why, but people are very strict on keeping one specific theme for your deck to do so it has the most synergy. But I don't think that it always has to be this way. And I think this deck kind of does that. It leaves you with more options and more fun and more of a wild card. So if you want something that's a little bit more of a wild card, which I enjoy, I think this deck could be really special and really cool. I think you can find cards to you, just like I talked about my pet cards. I think there could be cards, other class cards or other themed cards that work for you better and are very interchangeable. I think there's a core set of cards that are like kind of important to this deck for sure, but I don't think it has to ever be just one thing. So I hope you have fun playing it.
Yeah, I like that. I think especially if you have 11 as a commander, like you went the ultimatum route plus a couple other pretty impactful instants and sorceries, but the list of expensive and awesome instants and sorceries in commander is so huge. Yeah, you could just pick all your favorite cards for that purpose and, yeah, really customize it. And I think that's really cool.
And a lot of stuff you don't see often or get to cast often because they're, one, too expensive, or nobody plays those cards often, right? So,
yeah.
It's really fun.
Totally. Yeah, that's kind of one of my favorite things to do in Commander is cheating on mana cost, just because, you're right. There are a lot of cards that are just too expensive, I guess, mana wise for people to want to play just in any deck. So yeah, being able to cheat on those and play those cards is just it feels good.
Oh yeah,
I think, I mean, we went through all of the questions that I have. Is there anything that I missed. Anything else you want to shout out or talk about when it comes to this deck, Lua?
No, I think that's everything. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I loved chatting with you. And I'm glad we were able to make this work. I think I'm a big fan of your content and all the stuff that you put out there. And what you're doing with Scrybabies especially is really important. And so I'm honored to have had you on as a guest. And if anyone out there wants to come find your stuff, where is it that they can find you?
Yeah, I am over on Twitter, Instagram, just about everything. You can find all of my information on lewisdardis.com. And you can check out Scrybabies every other Friday. We have a lot of different gameplay. So Commander, we have CDH, we have 60 card formats. And we're going to be doing some new types of videos coming up in the next couple months. So if you want to check out Scrybabies, we're Scrybabies MTG on everything. We're just Scrybabies.
Sweet. Yeah. And I will have links to all of those things down in the episode description below. So yeah, just check it out there and go subscribe and do all the things and check out what Lua has going on. Okay. Yeah. Before I kind of wrap things up at the end of every episode, I always shout out every patron I have at the All That Glitters level, which is only one patron right now, which I love. And that is Jeff. Jeff, thank you so much for being a patron at that level. I really appreciate it. If you want to find me on any of my stuff, I'll also have links below at the Fairy Conclave on most things. And that's it. Thank you once again, Lua, for joining me. Do you have any final words you want to say as we wrap things up?
I'm so grateful that we got to do this together. I had a great time talking. And I know you mentioned patrons. Patrons really do make the world go round. So supporting channels like this is super, super important. And I appreciate that you showcase them, your patrons, in that way. I mean, that's really special. I'm just excited to talk about patrons. I love Patreon. Big fan.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely makes all of the content creation much less stressful, which is, which makes it a lot more fun. Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lua. And thank you everyone out there who listened to this episode. I hope to hear from you soon, and we will catch you all next time.